Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com, where we are liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Welcome, JC.
Howdy.
We have, and people don't see our whole table, JC. I sit here and there's a Springfield pistol on our table. But we shouldn't put that in the camera because then we'd definitely be kicked off. But there you have it. We are always a member of the militia. Remember, Richard Henry Lee said, in order to preserve liberty, the whole body of the people must always be armed. And that's where we are. Welcome to everybody in the chat room. What do we got going on? I love the fact, JC, that this thing that we got just gives us everybody. I don't have to keep switching back between Facebook and YouTube. And now we have Twitch in here. Dale says he's been notified 2 days in a row. Maybe we're crossing the threshold here. We're outliving the AI. I think it's actually the fact that people are beginning to share. You know, I mean, seriously, share. Share breaks the bondage of our algorithm censorships. So here's our first Twitch of the day, dear. From JJ Jackson, aka HNJC. I'm glad that people are beginning to realize that you're JC and not JD.
Yeah.
That's my fault because my YouTube channel says Chris Ann Hall JD, meaning Juris Doctor.
I'm not sure that's on there anymore.
It's not on there anymore. I don't remember if I took it down or not. But anyway, welcome everybody. I have a First Amendment issue. Well, First Amendment issue. Shame on me. I have a freedom of speech issue all the way from France, JC, with a little bit of humor in it for you. Did you hear that the Muslim countries, the Muslim countries are boycotting French-made goods because the Prime Minister of France has said that he will support the president of France, Emmanuel Macron. Is that how you say that? I mean, you can do it the French thing. You studied the French thing. Macron.
Okay. Macron.
Macron. So the Muslim world has the call to boycott French goods in protest after President Emmanuel Macron publicly defended cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, which are considered blasphemous in Islam. And the Islamic countries responded with a protest of, are you ready? Cartoons. Oh, I forgot to share. Oh, man, that was my whole moment, my boom moment. Cartoons of the president of France. Do you see the irony of that, right? So you cannot buy French goods. You have to chop off people's heads. You have to threaten to kill people if they make a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, but you respond to in that protest of a cartoon of the president with footprints on his head.
French are so creative.
No. That's the Muslim countries. Those are not the Muslims in France.
I thought that's in France.
No. This is all over. This is Kuwait. This is all over the place. So just so I can connect the dots for you. Freedom of speech is not an American principle. Freedom of speech is a principle of human rights. It's a principle that is tied to the securing of life, liberty, and property. And if you want to have a freedom of speech to create a cartoon where the president of France has a French style nose and footprints on his forehead, then you must also support the cartoon drawings of Muhammad. Now, here's the interesting thing, JC, because I scoured the internet for these Muhammad cartoons. I must have spent a good, and I am a very good researcher, JC. You know me. I can find a needle in a haystack in a very short period of time on the internet. I must have spent at least 25 minutes looking for these cartoons. They are nowhere to be found.
Hmm.
So the media, the American media, will not post these cartoons of Muhammad that are so offensive. But you guarantee if there was some kind of, well, when the guy made the crucifix in the jar of urine, it was all over the papers,
mm-hmm.
right? You make some kind of remark about Christ or some caricature of a pastor or something like that. It is all over the internet, but I could not find. There's another one. A picture with a boot print on his face. Right? Seriously, guys.
Yeah.
It's either freedom of speech and freedom of press, or it's not.
Hmm.
So there you have it. But a Kuwait non-governmental chair of hypermarkets said that over 50 of its outlets plan to boycott French products.
There was, what was that? Charlie Hebdo? Wasn't this the thing that reason Charlie Hebdo was bombed back then?
Yep. Yep, that's it.
We will not tolerate your cartoons.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite how that went, but.
Yeah.
But that's the funny story for today. There's a viral thing going on. It's a viral search, and it's about whether people can change their vote. And since I wanted to talk about voting today, half of what we're doing today is about voting today and about something that Brett Kavanaugh said and about the elections that are coming up. And I also wanted to talk about the election questions, cases that are going to be coming before the Supreme Court, that sort of thing. Not specifically the cases, right? But the specific issues, right? These things were going to be coming up. I thought this would be good to talk about as well. So we have now Google search spikes for the term, can I change my vote? Now, where this comes from, allegedly, JC, is that Donald Trump tweeted out this. Strongly trending Google since immediately after the second debate is, can I change my vote? Trump says this refers to changing it to me. The answer in most states is yes. Go do it. Most important election of your life. Now, what they're saying is that you've got this. Look at it. Do we need more confusion in all of this?
It's funny. I was actually wondering about that phenomenon of people thinking about this because of so much the huge push for the early voting and the mail-in ballots,
mm-hmm.
because the American electorate is so traditionally fickle, and you always have the so-called October surprise and all just the fact that there is a term called October surprise tells you how idiotic the American electorate is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Something happened in October. Like you are so devoid of principles upon which you base your decisions that some sort of tabloid event 3 weeks before an election causes you to shift allegiances. I mean, you have two diametrically opposed worldviews here.
Yeah.
And what, because you saw a debate. There was a debate, so you learn. I'm speechless. Americans are so freaking stupid.
Not in
that
general,
because
not in
of
don't
debate,
make generalizations.
Debate number two dropped some massive revelation that you did not know about Joe Biden or Donald Trump. If you are so, I tell you honestly, so here's what we need, right? Because big social tracks everything, and you know this. We need to get the IP addresses of everyone who searched that. Can I change my vote? And then you track them freaking down and round them up and interrogate them. Was this a curiosity about the conversation, or are you actually considering, based on something you saw in debate number two, Jay, well, you know, Joe said this, Trump said this, I wanted to change my vote. Okay, your voting rights are revoked. You can no longer vote. You're too stupid to vote. Thank you very much. That's what should happen.
Well, what's crazy is that many states, there are several states that actually do allow you to change your early vote, right? Most states do not allow or allow voters to change their early votes. There are some that do. Here we go. As if New York needs more problems. In New York, if you've submitted an absentee ballot but change your mind, you can show up to your polling place during early voting or on election day and cast a vote in which the absentee ballot is set aside and not counted.
Oh, Lord.
In Michigan, voters who have sent a ballot can submit a written and signed request to their voting clerk by 5 p.m. on October 30th. Requesting to have their ballot nullified. Minnesotans who mailed in an absentee ballot had until October 20th to request a new ballot from their county or their election office. In New Hampshire, voters who submitted an absentee ballot can go to the polls on election day during the first hour they're open, vote in person, or before their absentee ballot is processed.
Yeah.
In Wisconsin, if time allows, a voter can cancel their original absentee ballot and request a new one, but they have until October 29th, the legal deadline for requesting absentee ballots by mail.
Yeah, please. Everybody do this. Just do it. Just everybody. I mean, certainly you can have, you know, an epiphany, a conversion. I mean, but honestly. Is that what we're talking about? This is not what we're talking about. Because this is every freaking election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable to me. Unbelievable. Maybe I'm going to be called Jim Crow or something. but could we get a test or something? An MRI scan of your cranium? You know, I'm like, okay, they actually have a brain, you know, so you can start the process of applying for your voting privileges.
Right.
Dear God, help us.
Civics test. JJ Jackson says we need a civics test. The problem with the civics test, JJ Jackson, is what they're actually teaching in civics. We are where we are today because of what we teach. So, right? I'm just... And for me, you know, I have to sort of shake off the initial urge that JC has to, you know, talk about the idiots. I have to shake that off and just, you know, I want to be the educator and I want people to understand that we have to see this as an educational tool, but we also need to see this as a response to an uneducated electorate. We need to make sure that what we're doing is reaching people, but at the same time, we also have to recognize the confusion that is going to come from this new revelation that if you don't like your vote, you can go change it.
I love it.
I mean, you've got the confusion of the ballots.
Do it.
Mail-in ballots. You've got the confusion of people. Well, we told you yesterday, you got the drive-through ballots where the in Texas, they had the stacks of driver's license where they were just using stacks of driver's licenses as they were coming through the whole thing, right? So now we have this issue where people are going to be showing up on election day saying, I voted, but I want to change my vote. And just because this has gone out everywhere, JC, what's going to be amazing is how many people will show up in a state without even researching. How many of these people at the polling place are going to actually even know the law? Right. And how much more confusion is this going to add to everything else that we're doing? Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the issues with the Supreme Court handling these election questions. And on CNN, Kavanaugh Monday night gave a indication on at least a little bit of an education on what this is all about. So I wanted to show you what Kavanaugh says here. And he says on Monday night, that under the U.S. Constitution, the state courts do not have a blank check to rewrite state election laws for federal elections. He says that he wrote in his last opinion, the one where they were talking about the Wisconsin ballots, we want to avoid the chaos and suspicions of impropriety that can ensue if thousands of absentee ballots flow in after election day and potentially flip the results of an election. So what I wanted to show you here is Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1. The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof of the states. But the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the places of choosing senators. Now this is obviously prior to the 17th Amendment. So the legislators were the choosing the senators back then, and then that was solely in the legislators. So the whole process for electing senators and representatives is to be designed wholly at the state level. There are some things that Congress can come in by the legislature of the states, right? Not at, you know, not the governor or the courts or the mayor or the county commission, but by the legislature. Now, Congress can make a law to make or alter these regulations on very specific circumstances, and that is when Congress is involved. But the go-to is state level. If we remember when we were talking about those cases in Wisconsin, and we were talking about the case in Philadelphia with the whole ballots. Do we have a drive-through ballot? Can we count ballots that come in 3 days afterwards? And what has happened is these things are coming through the legislative process, and the courts on the state level are changing them. They're saying, no, you can't, you have to do this. So what's happened is there's a legislative process in Wisconsin. There's a legislative process that says this is how the election takes place. Mm-hmm. Somebody came in and sued and said, well, this election process does not accommodate me. So you need to change that. So then the courts came in, second-guessed the legislature in that process. And this is what Kavanaugh is talking about when the courts are changing the election process created by the legislature. So the Supreme Court, number one, is very hesitant to get involved in the election regulation process that's set by the state legislature. When they get involved is in the case that we saw recently, when the courts are changing the legislative process. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, This is par for the course. This is emblematic of what's happening overall in America, everywhere, on every front. Mm-hmm. We have practically abandoned the legislative process. We have traded the legislature with its deliberative process mm-hmm. for the immediate ad hoc decisions of courts and executives on various levels. You have governors issuing decrees, right? Essentially right. declaring what is and isn't the law, creating law out of whole cloth, changing existing law on a whim. And you could say the same thing for county commissioners, mayors, on and on, judges, courts.
Right.
So where is the legislature? It's the same thing. It's the same issue during the COVID. So all of these so-called crises that are happening, each of you name mm-hmm. whatever it is, COVID, riots, whatever, it doesn't matter. You stick in the name. Every single crisis follows the very same process, carries out the very same attack, and that is an erasure of the legislative process. So we're moving
it's
further and further and further into as our friend Bernie Thompson likes to say, away from the rule of law toward the law of rulers.
The fundamental thing that's violated here is separation of powers. And it's being violated on many levels, and it's precipitated by the legislative branch to begin with, right? Because what you have is the legislators initially creating these legislations to give power to the governor, right? So you have every state now has an Emergency Powers Act in which they bestow upon a governor a lawmaking capacity, which is reciprocally a violation of powers, a separation of powers, because number one, the legislative branch does not have the authority to expand or alter or reduce the power of the governor outside the amendment of the Constitution. So I wonder, people don't think about this.
The legislature has no authority to give it away, and the executive has no authority to wield it.
Right, exactly. So. But if you would look at it, people don't think deeply about things anymore. So we want, people say, well, the governor has to have this power. Well, if the governor has to have this power, then you have to amend the Constitution to do it. If you say that the legislature can give power to the governor beyond its constitutional delegation, then you also have to agree that the legislature should have the same authority to take away power from the governor without amendment to the Constitution. What would stop the legislature from saying, okay, governor, you have no power at all?
Mm-hmm. But by doing that, you've nullified the very basis of government. You've nullified
yes.
separation of powers. You've nullified the Constitution of the state, Constitution of the United States. So, I mean, you're openly declaring by the mode of operation of mm-hmm. of our governments for the last year, they're openly declaring that there essentially is no government process, right? That there is no state constitution. State constitutions are null and void. The Constitution of the United States are null and void. So we are, in practical terms, operating as if there are no constitutions. Well, if that is the case, that's what you're demonstrating. Then upon what basis do you have to charge anybody with any crime whatsoever and enforce mm-hmm. any law? Because you are, in practice, declaring that the entire framework of government itself is non-existent, non-functional.
Well, but the framework becomes a banana republic.
It's lawlessness in which
the government then, whichever branch at the time wants, because at this point in time we have legislature still creating laws, we have executives creating laws, and we have judiciary creating laws. So you have three branches of lawmakers when there's only supposed to be one, and within that, then you have people who are creating law outside this, And the lawmaking process, which is supposed to secure the rights of the people, has actually become the mechanism to destroy their rights. Because when you allow any branch of government, and I say any at all, to do something they've not been delegated the authority to do, then what you are establishing by doctrine is that the government, that the branches themselves are the authors of their own power. You are establishing by doctrine then, by legal doctrine, that the government itself is the sole authority for its own authority, which means that you are operating by doctrine with no constitution at all. So the legislature is above the Constitution. The judiciary is above the Constitution. The executive is above the Constitution. And then you must admit by doctrine that there is no Constitution. And when you do that, then you forget why we had one in the first place. The reason we have a written Constitution is to prevent the very thing that we're seeing right now. Because you see, the written Constitution is there to prevent people from doing things they're not supposed to be doing.
Well, and the Constitution is, I mean, that is the essentially the contract of government. It creates and defines the government. So if these people are saying by their actions that, well, there essentially is no Constitution, then there is no government. There is no legitimate basis for any governmental function to be taking place. So we are living absolutely in a banana republic, absolute lawlessness. It's mind-boggling to me. I mean, 1840s, 100, over a century, century and a half ago, right here, Bastiat described all of this.
Yeah.
How freaking dumb are we?
Well, in reality, James Madison described it in 1792. James Madison's essay on property is nearly identical to that of Bastiat's The Law. So Bastiat read Madison, Bastiat read Locke, Bastiat read Trenchard, and put all those things together. And that's where we are. So the Constitution is not just simply a contract. It is the written consent of the people to the government. And remember, the Declaration of Independence says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. We have put the consent of the governed in writing in the form of constitutions. So our U.S. Constitution is what the people through their states consent to for the federal government. The state constitutions are what the people of the state consent to as the limits and law of their government. And yeah. So what you now have are governmental entities acting outside the consent of the people, which by definition is unjust government.
Yeah, you can throw the city and county charters in this, because the thing is, all of these at every level, municipal, state, federal, I mean, all of these things mirror one another, right? The constitutions, mm-hmm. the federal constitution, the state constitutions, county charters, the city charters. They all have every single one of them.
Right.
Basically enjoin the government to be a republican form of government with separation of powers. And this has been violated at every level of our government this year.
And so the solution, the government's like, what's the solution? What's the solution? Well, number one, the solution is not a reaction. That's where why we're at where we are, is just simply emotionally reacting to what's happened. The solution has to come through education. It has to come through deliberate, educated response, not reaction, response to the lawless nature of government. It's not a reaction of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's not a reaction of against all kind of government. It has to be a response of an educated people to get involved, to get off their chairs and from behind the keyboards and actually become involved. And I don't mean just voting involved. I mean, you have to run for office. You have to support people who have the right principles who run for office. You've got to know that people have the right principles, not just that they're nice people. That's what we, you know, I mean, that's something that we're totally lacking here. Sherry Barnett, JC, asks a question here in the chat room that I'm getting a lot of. So former Vice President Joe Biden indicated on Monday that he might be open to shifting Supreme Court justices to lower courts if elected president, noting that he hadn't made any judgment on the issue yet. Can the president do this? This is not a delegated power of the president, just like packing the court. The president of the United States cannot alter how the judicial system works. They can't add more justices to the Supreme Court. They can't take justices away from the Supreme Court. They can't change how they function. That is a job of Congress.
They're not authorized.
No.
He's not authorized.
And so I said the Constitution does not authorize the president.
Yeah, but I mean the word can't. This is what we've been talking about the whole show. None of what they're doing is authorized.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's hard to answer the question anymore of whether any individual politician can or can't, because apparently they're able to do many, many, many things that are not authorized.
Right.
So no, he's not authorized to do that. He doesn't have the authority to do that. But that would take a Congress and a people to stop that.
Right. JJ Jackson says Clarence Thomas doing the swearing in ceremony and not Roberts. Barrett gets to choose.
Right.
Barrett gets to choose who swears her in. So she obviously chose Justice Thomas.
Did not choose Roberts.
And did not choose Roberts.
They tried to make much about some alleged animosity between her and Roberts, which you know how the left is, but she
everything is drama.
She wrote
several
opinions disagreeing with things he said, which is how she answered that.
Right.
It has nothing to do with Justice Roberts, but I wrote about his decisions, his views.
Mm-hmm.
And she backed them up substantially.
I disagree with what Roberts writes 90% of the time. So, I mean, but I don't want to punch him in the face or something. You know, he's just wrong. Not only is he just wrong, I believe he's willfully wrong. I believe he knows what he's doing. Thank you, Dragons Talon, for your super chat today.
Well, I think it goes back to, you often quote, I think it's Samuel Adams with the issue that it's knowledge and virtue, the two things that are really the basis of a functioning peaceful government is knowledge and virtue. So that's what's lacking. And I think virtue in particular, when you talk about people not standing up, not engaging, and it seems to me you either have the virtue to take a stand and push back, or it'll happen in survival mode, which is what I often say, that it is quite possible that it's going to take a lot bigger calamity than what we have experienced and been experiencing so far for people to stand up. You look at what's going on in this virus thing. Many of these sleepy people have perceived the virus as the enemy, right? So you can't, we've had this big calamity. Not to the extent that they recognize it's actually the government. Mm-hmm. From whom you're under attack. So I still don't think we're there. So we're sort of plowing ahead, trying to motivate people, trying to educate people. You're going to need either a great awakening or a great calamity that leads to a great awakening. That's what's going to have to happen.
Yeah. Well, that's something that we're going to have to, but both of those things will require education, right? So the Great Awakening is a spiritual awakening, which comes through spiritual enlightenment and knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah.
The calamity will drive us into further decline unless the people are educated on the proper response. And that's why I wanted
to have educated people to follow. So
yes.
When the calamity comes, you're not going to have a mass of people standing up leading. You're going to have a mass of people freaking out, demanding that something needs to be done. So you have to have, there has to be a cadre of leaders,
right,
who have the virtue and knowledge necessary to lead the desperate, panicking idiots. That's how the people are being manipulated and led now, because for many decades, the knowledgeable, virtuous people that we needed have withdrawn from this arena, and we've left it to the lunatic left to lead, and the deep state globalist right to lead. And so the constitutional people, the people of faith, have been on the outside looking in of their own choosing, I might add.
You know, JC, I've been involved with politicians this election term more than I have probably in the last 10 years. I'm not going to make any comment about that at the moment, but I think that a lot of things would be different if we educated people in office the value of simply saying, that's not my job, right? Yeah. The value of simply saying, it's not my job. For example, a U.S. Congresswoman in this debate about abortion, right, is easily answered by saying, I am personally against abortion. I believe that that all human life has a value and has a right. I believe that a baby is not a body part. However, as a U.S. representative, I also understand that there is no power delegated to the federal government to have an answer for this issue. Nope. That's what should be said.
What? I think I'm missing an answer for what issue?
For abortion. Abortion is not a federal issue. This is not a U.S. House of Representatives. We don't need U.S. House of Representatives writing laws to make abortion illegal or to legalize abortion. This is not a federal issue.
You need the federal government to withdraw from this issue.
Yes, exactly.
So that the states can protect.
Well, but the federal government has, the U.S. legislator has made nothing, no laws about abortion to begin with.
Right.
The only thing that comes out of the federal government at this point is a Supreme Court opinion about a state case.
Yeah.
So a U.S. House rep should say, we have no business in this issue. The federal government has no business in this issue. I am not where you find the answer to your questions. The answers to your questions need to be found at the state level. This is not a U.S. legislative issue. And we need U.S. House reps and senators who will draw that, who will speak that federal truth.
Well, and you have to have state legislatures that recognize they don't work for the federal courts, right? Because you've had states, I think like Mississippi or Louisiana or somebody, pass life protecting laws.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Supreme Court say, no, you can't have that law. So you have to have a state that says, screw you. You don't tell us what to do.
And again, that's
we're sending out the sheriff,
right,
to shut down these clinics.
Right.
End of story.
And again, that's at the local issue. This is not something that your U.S. House rep or your senator will have a say in. So the court issue, the Supreme Court issue, the federal court issue stops at the local level. We don't need federal legislation to be involved in all of this. So our U.S. House reps, our U.S. senators need to simply understand that sometimes, in the case of the way we're running today, the majority of the time, the answer to the issue is, well, the truth is, we have not been delegated this power through the Constitution. So it really is not my job to do this. That's what we need. So that's what we need. And
I don't think everybody understood what you said there.
Okay. It's not the federal government's job to have a law for abortion or a law against abortion. If you want to handle abortion, it has to be on the state level.
And the states are obligated to protect life.
And the states are obligated to protect life. But that debate has to happen on the state level, not on the federal level. You can't.
So we got, and we got into this, reiterate, because of a, number one, a federal judiciary wielding an authority it does not have. In overruling the states,
right?
State laws, and you had states bowing to a federal judiciary who does not have the authority to rule over them,
right? So the First Amendment does not have the language of a right to life. Okay, so that's not in the First Amendment. The right to life is in the opening paragraph of the Declaration of Independence.
It's a natural right.
It's a natural right. You have a natural right to life. You have a natural right to liberty. You have a natural right to control your property.
Which is the sole purpose of any form of government.
Right. Is to secure our rights
the natural rights of the individual.
Right. The natural rights of the individual. That's what the Declaration of Independence says. So I am not telling you that it is okay for states to legalize abortion. Okay. I'm telling you that the federal government has no authority in the issue, period. And that people should work to secure life through their governments, and it is not a question to be answered. You should not be asking your U.S. House rep, what are you going to do about abortion? You should not be asking your U.S. Senator, what are you going to do about abortion?
You've talked about another amendment. Was the Fifth Amendment? You talked about another amendment in relation to protection of life. I can't remember you talked about that before. But anyway, it's it's a common theme of the states just succumbing to federal unauthorized federal power.
What we have to understand is that the Bill of Rights has to do with government actors. So in the Fifth Amendment, which would be an amendment that addresses life, right? The one that says you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process. That would be government forced mandated abortions. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people, government saying it's okay to choose on your own as an individual to end that life.
Well, it's government sanctioned murder.
Yeah.
If you have a law against murder,
yes,
for one group of citizens, but not
right, or
one group of people, and not
that's how
murder for another group of people,
right?
Anyway.
So I wanted to talk about the cases that will now be before the Supreme Court coming up this next session, which starts November 2nd, with the new Justice Barrett on there. Now, if you're a longtime listener, you know that I like to go through a website called SCOTUS Blog. And SCOTUS Blog is a little bit more legal wonky. It's a little bit more for people who study in the law, who are interested in law or are lawyers or judges themselves, because it's written like a legal review, like a peer review. What are they called? A journal.
Law journal.
Law journal.
It's not quite
law journal, but it's not USA Today.
Right. Okay? Sure.
So in our SCOTUS Blog, written by Amy Howe, this time we hear about these cases. Now, the big one that everybody's talking about is the argument in the Affordable Care Act. And that's going to come this coming Wednesday. They go back to session on November 2nd, right? And so the Supreme Court on Wednesday released the calendar for November argument session, which will include the latest challenge to the Affordable Care Act and a clash between religious liberty and LGBTQ rights. And the justices will hear two consolidated ACA cases, which ask whether the law's individual insurance mandate is unconstitutional without a tax penalty. And if so, whether the rest of the law can remain standing. Now, before we get into the rest of these cases, I want to remark once again and to remind everybody, there are people who are running around talking about Amy Coney Barrett having to recuse herself from certain cases that are coming up. But no one is, as of yet, talking or have talked about the fact, F-A-C-T, fact, that Alina Kagan must recuse herself from the Affordable Care Act decisions because she was Solicitor General actually arguing in the courts in favor of the Affordable Care Act. So when you have a personal vested legal interest in a case, you have an ethical responsibility to recuse yourself. Now, as I heard a law professor from George Washington, is that right? No, what is it? I don't know. Is law school George Washington or George?
There's both.
Oh, okay. Never mind that. Some George law school
George
in Washington.
Mason, Georgetown, George Washington University.
Yeah, George Washington University. Say that it's primarily left up to the justices to recuse themselves because of this judicial supremacy ideology that we have. And the fact, as unfortunately, Thomas Jefferson was right when he said the impeachment of justices was nothing more than a scarecrow. Justices who do not recuse themselves on the Supreme Court level have no consequences. There are no consequences for that. So they run around, and the talking heads run around all the time talking about how now that Amy Coney Barrett has to recuse herself for this, and yet how many cases has Alina Kagan sat in judgment of the very case in which she argued in favor as a Solicitor General? This is a clear-cut violation of ethics, and she should have been impeached at the first time.
It's one of the problems overall. There are no consequences for judges.
Yes.
At any level.
Right.
It's really the most out-of-control branch of government in this country.
It's right.
The judicial branch at every level, whether it be county, district, appeals, federal, doesn't matter. Judges are not held accountable for their act, or very rarely. I mean, once in a blue moon. I remember the thing in Indiana where I think the legislature moved to impeach a judge. Almost never happens.
Well, and that's the problem that we have when someone is left to govern themselves.
Yeah.
There's no check and balance. And I have to go back to the Anti-Federalist paper of Brutus Six, where he was arguing that yes, we need an independent judiciary, but the problem becomes that we make them so independent that not even only heaven can have any kind of judgment against them, so that they are pretty much untouchable at our governmental level. And so just once again, every case with the Affordable Care Act should be minus. It shouldn't have. They were worried. We don't want the Affordable Care Act to go before 8. We have to get Amy Coney Barrett to be on the bench so we have 9. Well, you shouldn't have had 8 to begin with. You should have had 7. Now with Amy Coney Barrett there, we should have 8 again, because Alina Kagan should, by ethical standards, recuse herself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's several cases that they're going to be hearing, but there's going to be a couple that are important, and I just want to mention those before we go. One is this Fulton v. City of Philadelphia, whether the city violates the First Amendment when it makes participation in the city's foster care system by a faith-based agency contingent on actions and statements by the agency that conflict with the agency's religious beliefs, and whether the court should reconsider its 1990 decision in Employment Division v. Smith, holding that the government can enforce laws that burden religious beliefs or practices as long as the laws are neutral and or generally applicable. Now, what's going to be interesting about this particular case, just to give you a background, the state foster care agencies are eliminating Christians from the foster care program because they're telling the Christians that if you're going to foster a child, you have to sign a document that says you will not take them to church. You will not teach them religion. You will not involve them in religious practices. And so that obviously eliminates many Christians from the foster program because we are not going to have parents who are fostering children, leaving them at home when they go to church and engage in their religious practices. The other second part of that has to do with the can the government enforce laws that burden religious beliefs or practices as long as they are neutral or generally applicable? Well, the Freedom Protection Acts that have been passed by many of the states actually say in state legislation that the rule of general applicability is not a relevant standard. That if you burden a religious belief and it's not the least the least restrictive means possible, then it doesn't matter if it's actually generally applicable. Now, generally applicable means if I make a non-Christian do it, then I can make a Christian do it, right? So I'm not actually saying that this is only Christians can't take their children to church. We're also saying Jewish people can't take their children to church. We're telling Satanists they can't take their kids to church either. So they would call that a rule of general applicability. But the Freedom of Religion Restoration Acts passed by many of the states say that the rule of general applicability does not apply unless it's also the least restrictive means necessary. And so this is going to come about. This case could set a precedent for many things, JC. I mean, religious exemptions for vaccinations. This could set a precedent that would control religious exemptions for vaccinations. Many states have religious exemptions for vaccinations. And so if the Supreme Court decides that the states can create these laws that infringe on your religious beliefs, as long as they infringe on everybody's, that they can be enforced, then this will be a precedent for those who are enslaved to the judicial. I will say this very clearly, those who are enslaved to the judicial supremacy. Because we know, especially, you know, in our church, we don't care what the court says. It's our religious beliefs. It's our rights. It's our natural right. James Madison said the most important right that we have is our conscience. The most valuable property that we have is the property of conscience. And so this case, Fulton v. City of Philadelphia, could really, really have an impact on many, many cases at the state level.
Good stuff.
So these are the kind of things that we need to look at. These are upcoming on the Supreme Court in the next week. And remember, this shouldn't be. The docket for the Supreme Court should not be as important as it is.
Right.
The docket for the Supreme Court should be important as far as educating ourselves on where our government is. it ought to be important to us on ensuring that our state and local courts are following the proper rule of constitution, proper rule of state constitution, proper rule of federal constitution. But these U.S. Constitution Supreme Court issues have become so important because we have transformed America into an oligarchy.
Yeah.
An indeed. Oligarchy of judiciary. It is majority of five, basically. So five people rule over America. Five people. I do want to not sort of...
Go change your vote.
Yeah, go change your vote. I don't want to nitpick, but there's a lot of questions about this term democratic republic instead of constitutional republic.
That's still a thing?
It's Well, apparently Amy Coney Barrett called us a democratic republic.
Small d, meaning we vote?
I don't know, but let's... I want to break this down as simple as I possibly can to help us understand why it's important that we are a constitutional republic, because these two words, this is a compound proper noun, constitutional republic. It is a compound proper noun that specifically describes how our government derives its power and how our government uses its power. Okay. So a constitutional republic is a government whose power and consent to power comes from a written constitution. A democratic republic would be a government whose power comes through the popular vote of the people. We are not a popular vote of the people. We are a government, both on the state and local level, whose power comes from the consent through a written constitution. We are a republic, not a democracy, because our laws are made through representation, not through popular vote. So yes, we elect our representatives. We do not appoint representatives. Our representatives are not born in aristocracy. We elect our representatives, but that's where the democratic process ends. Government derives its power from a constitution that is written, and laws are created through equal representation through a representative process, which makes us a republic. There are many kinds of republics throughout history. There is only one constitutional republic. Okay? So we need to make sure that we understand why that's important. Somebody will simply say it's semantics. Somebody will simply say it doesn't matter. But the reality is words matter. And the whole reason that we have devolved into this, look, I don't want to harp on this a lot, but the whole reason that we have this whole national popular vote mess is because we refuse to specifically identify who we are. And it doesn't take any more syllables, any more breath, any more brain cells to say constitutional republic than it does to say Democrat republic.
So is it lazy speak, or why is she saying that?
I can't tell you why she's saying that. I don't know why she's saying that.
I think it's loose language. Yes.
And
people use that simply to indicate that we vote. Right. We're in a system where people vote.
Right.
People make the decisions. That's what they seem to be using that term loosely. Right. Little d, democracy in that sense. But as you say, it's not accurately descriptive.
Right.
Of our system. She should say representative. Right. Because what they're trying to say is representative, meaning.
But that's what a republic is.
Representatives, right.
That's what a republic is.
Yeah.
A republic is a government where laws are made through representation, not through popular vote. A republic guards the minority from majority tyranny.
Yeah.
And that's what it's for. The Constitution part of it tells us what kind of republic we are. We are not an aristocratical republic. We are not a democratic republic. We are a constitutional republic where government gets its power from the written consent in a constitution.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's one of those sort of alarm bells. I think you talked about this many times of the, you know, the sort of the leaven in the law schools.
Right.
You almost can't come out of there without some of that affecting you.
Right.
I mean, she's been in there a long time.
Oh, well, and she's a scholar. She's not just simply a judge. She's a scholar of law. If you didn't see the hearings where she knew cases like that, so she is a scholar of law.
You would love for whoever she's speaking to, whoever's interviewing or asking the question, you would love for them to pause and say, Judge, can you define that term?
Yes.
Democratic? What do you mean by that?
But again,
that's what I would love to hear in all these instances where that's said.
But this is where, and I hate to get into the whole, you know, conspiracy thing, but this is where the enemies of America want to lead the people to a democracy of popular majority vote. Mm-hmm. Because popular majority vote, mob rule, is emotionally manipulative. You know, you can easily manipulate a mob. Look at us. My goodness, the whole world put on stinking masks for a flu. Our governor in the state of Florida said no more mask mandates. We're not going to be putting anybody in jail. We're not going to be enforcing these mask mandates anywhere in the state. And people are still wearing them everywhere.
Well, not to put you on the spot, but I mean, you still have kind of a wait and see attitude about Barrett, right? I mean, there were some things in her opinions that were, I don't know what the word would be, troubling.
Concerning.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
I think you've said, she'll be overall better than Ginsburg. But if you're looking for a straight down the line constitutional justice, that remains to be seen.
So far, Gorsuch is the top bid for constitutionalists that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Kavanaugh, in my humble opinion, is below Alito. And Alito is above Kavanaugh simply because Alito has now started following Gorsuch. And Alito is the silent guy in there. Now, Thomas comes in third just simply because Thomas has the tendency to be a police power statist.
Mm-hmm.
That's where his pet peeve is. He goes there, right? Roberts, Sotomayor,
worthless.
Breyer, Kagan, they're all worthless. They're worthless. They have no loyalty to the Constitution whatsoever. So we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I can't make judgments about her yet. We got to see what she does on the Supreme Court. Somebody wants Mac for president.
Vote for Mac. He's back here snoring.
I know. I heard that back there. Was that him snoring?
Yeah. That's how concerned he is about it.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. The jury is out on Barrett. We'll have to wait and see how she does. But I've never made an opinion right off the bat of any of them. I always give them the benefit of the doubt. Chrisanne is the ever forever optimist. So I want to give people the opportunity. See, the Bible teaches me that I am to judge people by their fruits, not by their political party affiliations and not by the labels in which they label themselves. So you're going to have to produce some fruit, and that's what I'm going to do.
You did a show talking about all the potential nominees, and you know she had an issue with qualified immunity, super precedent. I think we got a little more insight into the super precedent issue as she was speaking. I think it was a little less concerning to me, still concerning, but she sounded less extreme on precedent than what her statements had previously indicated.
Right.
You kind of got this sense of this sort of graduated level of precedent. So I thought she made clear, at least in certain areas, that if something needs to be overturned, it'll be overturned.
Man, I sure hope so, guys. I really do. But again,
but certain things won't. Certain things won't.
Certain things will not. She's still married to precedent. And every here, talk about fruits. Every opinion that I have disagreed with so far with Gorsuch has been because he stuck with precedent. Now, Gorsuch, by the way, has surprised me with the whole precedent thing, because he has actually come out and challenged precedent. He has actually come out and said in Fourth Amendment issues, several Fourth Amendment issues now, we ought, and even a religious liberty issue, we ought not be following this precedent. And he has had beautiful dissents. Those of you who are any judicial wonky kind of people, those of you who are judicial nerds, you'll remember that one of the best writers on the Supreme Court was Rehnquist. Rehnquist wrote amazing opinions. He wrote down at, you know, he didn't try to write over everybody's head. He put it down so everybody could do it. He was witty. He was brilliant in his speech. Gorsuch, I believe, is better than Rehnquist in writing.
Clarence Thomas, when in those areas where he aligns with the Constitution well, is also a very, very good writer, has great depth, great depth of reference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it's a police state, police power issue, you can actually see the difference in his writings. It lacks depth. Like it's just sort of a gut, like this is where he wants to be. So he writes less. And with less depth, you know, just the whatever extra powers any government agency or official or whatever wants to have to keep you safe, then he'll go out of his way to.
Hey, JC, you want to show everybody your jacket?
Sure.
This is the new jacket at GodGunsLiberty.com. Yep. Hold on. You don't have to look back at it. I'll make sure. There you go. And the new jacket at GodGunsLiberty.com. It's pretty awesome. It's got a nice zipper. It's very classy.
It's a bomber jacket. It's a
knitted bomber jacket.
Yeah.
Some of them are leather, but that's a knitted one. So, guys, just please share. Help us share right now. If you haven't shared, do it now. If you haven't given us a thumbs up, I know Twitch doesn't have a thumbs up, but if you're on Facebook, if you're on YouTube, then give us a thumbs up, guys. Help us out with that and help us overcome the censorship. I am watching this censorship happen right before my eyes. I get notifications when you guys actually like my Facebook page. And as I'm getting 200 new likes a day, JC.
No movement.
Uh-uh. Down movement.
Goes down.
My likes go down. So. Right. I am not listening to this. I believe a wise woman told me that what they're trying to do is put out false information to discourage us from actually posting. I will not be discouraged because I'm not here for 5,000. I'm here for one. I'm looking for James Otis Jr. I'm looking for Mercy Otis Warren. I'm looking for that person out there who wants to be the catalyst for the restoration of principle in America. And I believe it might be you. And so we will be here just like, no, I need to buy likes like Hillary. No, JC, that's funny. Kansas
buying
Fester.
From her, she doesn't need it anymore.
I am not even allowed to buy likes. Facebook has banned me from buying likes. I never bought them to begin with, but I am on a list on Facebook that I'm not allowed to promote any of my posts. I'm not allowed to create any type of advertisement. I'm not allowed to engage in any monetary activity on Facebook, whatever.
You like Pence? He's so likable that insects just show up and want to live on his head.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yeah. So likable. Awesome.
All right, guys. It is Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining us. You want to tell them about your hat?
Yeah. GodGunsLiberty.com.
It Check says it ChrisAnnHall.com on it.
Get your shirt, hat, coat, jacket, long sleeve shirt, short sleeve shirt.
It says join or die. Join or die.
God
Did
bless.
You notice that doesn't mean we're going to go around shooting people? It means that you will die without liberty if you don't join the liberty movement. That's
Correct.
What that means. All right, guys, remember, hit that thumbs up, hit that share, and go spread liberty. We need you doing that. God bless.